And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show goes like from Huntsville back on over to Chattanooga. I mean, from Tuscaloosa back on over to Gadsden. I mean, all the way down to that loveliest little village on the plains we call Auburn, straight across the line to what we call, once again, Fort Benning. Fort Benning. And then big old patches of North Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right, listen, we're going to take a break from the news. We're going to take a break from politics, take a break from war, and jump into a segment we do every Friday. Love doing this. So in case you don't already know, JP is a sports guru. In fact, one of our podcasts is Out of Right Field, which is JP doing conservative commentary with backdrop of sports. That being said, we also do a segment here every Friday called JP on Sports. And we have it in two segments. First segment is called The Three and Out. He gets to go with the top three stories he believes the sports world needs to be, you know, talked about. And then we jump back in the second round is with a buzzer and a timer. We call them the two-minute warnings, and that's where he gets to run 2 minutes per topic on sports. He also has his very own sound effect, courtesy of Sorority Girls at Auburn. Go, man.
JP on Sports!
All right. JP, three and out. You're up. Go.
So the U.S. Open is going on this weekend at the hardest course in the world. It is a bit touted, and rightfully so, of Oakmont Country Club. And the course has been kicking butt because the cut line right now is 7 over, which is insane. The cut line is only like at 1 or 2 over. And the winner right now is sitting at 5 under, which is Thurston Lawrence from South Africa. But like I said, it's been kicking butt because we got Scottie Scheffler, who is by far the best player in the world, currently sitting at 4 over. We've also got Rory McIlroy, the second best player in the world right now in terms of the FedEx Cup rankings. He's sitting at 7 over. And so it's the course has proven to be, you know, extremely difficult. So pretty much whoever can survive and get through the bloodbath safely is going to be the one that's sitting at top right now. But yeah, I think it's just amazing to me that, you know, just how hard the course is. If Scottie Scheffler sitting at 4 over, if anybody knows, Scottie Scheffler has been number one for, I mean, I don't even know, like at least a year. And if he's sitting at 4 over, I think that's a testament the course is pretty dang hard. So,
yeah.
But we'll see. This is the first time they played at Oakmont since 2016. And yesterday, I believe it was J.J. Spahn. Yeah, J.J. Spahn, who currently sits number two at 4 under. He was only the 8th player in history at a U.S. Open at Oakmont to have a bogey-free round. So just another statistic there to prove to the difficulty of the course.
Why has it been 10 years since they played there?
That's just that they have a cycle.
They have a rotation?
Yeah, they have a rotation of courses in the U.S. that they go through. So it's just Oakmont's turn again. I think they won't be playing there again until like 2030 or so, which all the U.S. Open players will be taking a sigh of relief for that because this is how hard it is. But yeah, it's fascinating to me because this is when you play at such a hard course like this, it makes the best in the world look like me on a Saturday here at the local country club. Yeah, so makes me feel a little better. But then I'd know if I had to go play at Oakmont, I'd probably shoot like 200 or something. So
one of my favorite lines you told me is when your dad told you, you've not earned the right to throw your clubs yet.
Yeah, if I get pissed and toss my clubs, you're not good enough to do that yet. So yeah, we'll see. There's been quite the frustration from some players. Scottie Scheffler even, you know, spiked his clubbing down after a drive there. So it's been fun to watch, you know, to see a difficult course like that and have they've been trying to manage it. But yeah.
All right. So the U.S. Open, that's number one. What's two?
NBA Finals, the Pacers are now up 2-1 on the Thunder, to my great surprise. I kind of thought the Thunder would come in and blow through them personally. I think the Thunder are the best team in the league, but it's still pretty early on. But this is an important game tonight, game four in Indiana. I think if the Pacers can get up to a 3-1 lead, it's going to be pretty dang hard for the Thunder to do that. I mean, it's only happened once where in 2016, LeBron and the Cavs came back from a 3-1 lead. But other than that, it's never happened in the finals. So if the Pacers can steal tonight's game, I'd say it's pretty safe to say it's theirs. But don't count the Thunder out, too. I mean, like I said, they're the best team in the league roster-wise for a reason. But we'll see. Haliburton has showed up big time for the Pacers this year. It has been fun to see a small market team like the Pacers compete with, I mean, the Thunder are also a small market team themselves. But I don't think many people expected the Pacers to be in the spot they are right now in the finals and looking to be, if they win tonight, one game away from winning the finals completely. So yeah, it's been quite fun to watch the Pacers build up a team and get to the finals like this. So we'll see if they can finish the job.
All right, that's two. You got golf and basketball. What's next?
So this is a big story. I mentioned it earlier. Revenue sharing is now official
in
college sports, and this is a big topic, and it's a topic I think needs to be discussed, because now you've pretty much got players deemed employees of the school, because now you have, instead of, you know, NIL before was collectives, and you know, you get a bunch of rich or even not rich, I mean, you could, anybody can donate to any collective of your choice, but it was like an outside, kind of not related to the school sort of, you know, deal. It's kind of its own thing, and they pay the players to come. But now you got the schools directly paying out of their revenue for the year to players, and I'm not sure exactly off the top of my head. I have to look it up, the exact amount, like max, that you know, colleges are able to give to players, but in a way, this is a kind of a good thing. So 20.5 million per school is allowed per revenue year to be given to athletes total.
And that's all sports.
That's all sports, yes. And obviously, more of the, they're probably going to be given to football and basketball over. That's like, those two are probably going to take the biggest chunk. But yeah, 20.5 million over all sports per revenue year, and. It's very unfortunate we're at this stage. However, I think this is, it had to be done in a certain, in my view, a little bit. This all could have been prevented if the NCAA actually showed some true leadership and stopped NIL getting to the spot that it is. But now that we're in the spot that it is, and unfortunately pay for play is just where we're at, I think if schools can directly pay the players, then it's going to have a little bit more of a level playing field. Because with collectives, you have such an uneven playing field of, some states collectives aren't even really allowed, I believe, until recently. But then you got, you know, states like Texas, where you got the old money people who are just extremely rich.
Oh, yeah.
And could dump a lot more money into theirs and say, you know, Nebraska or something. But if we're on a even playing field of each school has this max amount they can give to players, I think it'll make it fairer. However, like I said, I'm not happy with the fact that players are now kind of deemed employees of the schools, because now we get a conversation about unions, and, you know, we start the nasty road there.
I gotta guarantee they're gonna make them all like 1099 independent contractors.
I believe that's kind of what this does, yeah. But like I said, it's unfortunate that this is where we're at, but I think something like this had to be done to make the playing field a bit more even, because it was just kind of the wild, wild west, you know, before.
NIL is still the wild, wild west, but yeah. So let me ask you this, because you got time, unless I don't want to interrupt.
No, go ahead, yeah.
Okay, so is this revenue sharing, is this being put in place and it's going to wind up taking the place of NIL as they move away from NIL, or is NIL embedded and now they have two revenue streams for players?
Two revenue streams, for what I understand. I don't think NIL collectives are being outlawed completely, although I would kind of like to see that. But I would like to see collectives get done away, but it is kind of fun, you know, if I'm an Alabama fan and I can go to the NIL collective store and buy a polo or something, and that money goes to help, you know, recruit players. Like, that stuff I think is cool. But like I said, it becomes an issue because of just the unfairness of it. Like, Nebraska or, I don't know, Iowa or anybody can't compete with Texas A&M, with just the state of Texas alone has more money. So more money is going to be allowed to be driven from there. So I would hope that this is a step in the direction of collectives are just done away with and is strictly revenue sharing. We're kind of in a position of making a crappy situation a little bit less crappy. It's not going to be good. It's not going to be a perfect situation. But I would prefer, if we're going to have players being paid, it to come from the schools directly instead of collectives.
Yes. By the way, doesn't collective feel very communist in nature? It sounds like it.
It is a bit of a weird.
like you have been absorbed into the collective.
Yeah, it is a bit of a weird name there. But, you know, and hopefully this can also, you know, bring NIL back to what it was supposed to be. Of players that can make money if they do commercials, or if they do, you know, in the video games or whatever, if it's actually based off name, image, and likeness instead of PFP, pay for play, because that's the correct acronym it is right now of pay for play. But this is a big deal, I think. I mean, this is a new day in college sports, because it's student athlete doesn't even feel like a fair, you know, term for me. It's like employee athletes. employee athletes of the school. But we'll see. We'll see moving forward. It's what this is going to bring. Because like I said, I think the union conversation will be next.
And I wonder when they're going to wind up having to face some liability for slinging money at 18-year-olds who had no idea how to pay taxes or to handle their affairs. And they had bad family lives, so there was no support back home to advise them. And all of a sudden, you got kids that are in default to the IRS. When's that going to happen?
And the schools themselves, like I said, they're going to be responsible because they gave them the money and brought them in that situation.
And then you're going to wind up having the lawyers get involved. And the lawyers are going to say, we'll help set up trusts and we'll run the trust and then we'll get paid out of your trust. And next thing you know, everybody's at the trough.
Yeah, it's such a messy situation. I wish it could actually be name, image, and likeness. But I guess the cat's out of the bag at this point.
Here's an idea. Go back to the way it was. You play for the brand, the notoriety, the team. You get up there and you say, I used to play for a college ball.
Well, so. I do say it is fun playing the college football video game. So that wouldn't have been a thing though in the past. So I'm happy with it for that sense.
All right. That's it. Three and out. There's your top three stories. You got golf, basketball, and money. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. More JP on sports. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative. Just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. All right. So we're back for round two of JP on Sports. This is the section or the round where it's got a buzzer and a timer, 2-minute warning, we call it. He's able to just run 2 minutes per story, whatever story he's got, sports related, buzzer and a timer. First one, go.
Well, the Stanley Cup has been living up to the hype. So let me tell you these stats from the first four games. So game one, we had 7 goals scored and the game went into overtime. Game two, we had 9 goals scored and it went into double overtime.
Wow.
Game three, 7 goals scored. And then last night, game four, we had 9 total goals scored and it went into overtime with the Oilers coming out in overtime there against the Florida Panthers. So now
that's the way a championship series should go.
That is exactly how the Stanley Cup championship series should go. You're correct. But now the series is tied at 2-2 and the Panthers will be going up to Edmonton now. They'll play Saturday night to see who can steal game 5. But like I said, this is a big game. You're tied up 2-2. The next winner is 1-1 away from winning it all. But I just can sense it. You know, if the first four games have gone the way that they have, game 7 is just going to come. It's going to come. There's going to be a game 7. It's going to go all the way to 7. And what better, you know, championship than Stanley Cup game 7? So I'm very excited for that. But yeah, this series has definitely lived up to the hype. And it's a rematch of last year's Stanley Cup too. So that even adds on to the intrigue there for here in this rubber match. So yeah, we'll be looking forward to see how this goes.
All right, you came in way under the clock. I'm resetting and go.
So Simone Biles at Riley Gaines last week had a feud, a very short-lived feud, where Simone Biles called out Riley Gaines. And I did my podcast on this, by the way, if y'all go check it out. But Simone Biles called out Riley Gaines for calling out the Marissa Rothenberger, the Minnesota softball pitcher, quote, Marissa Rothenberger.
Oh, yeah.
Who they won the state championship where he pitched 21 consecutive runless innings. And Simone Biles pretty much said that Riley Gaines was bullying and was not being very inclusive enough of the transgender community, and then proceeded to then body shame Riley Gaines and said that she looked like a man body wise. So there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, Simone Biles has been in ads campaigns that, you know, against body shaming, but yeah, she went and body shamed Riley Gaines. But then you have a star athlete, the greatest gymnast of all time, of Simone Biles, who has a unique platform to call this stuff out, and she has a unique voice to speak up for women athletes, but yet she is choosing the side of men in women's sports and deciding that, oh, you shouldn't bully them, but it is fair for the men to bully girl athletes and go invade their sport. But also, you know, the predatory aspect of it, she's putting up girls in vulnerable positions to where dudes can come into their locker rooms. And yeah. Simone Biles, I mean, it's unfortunate, but she suffered, you know, the Larry Nassar stuff. She should know firsthand. Like,
She of all people
should understand, you know, the importance of protecting girls in sports. So it was very unfortunate. But then, like I said, Simone Biles' PR firm, PR team, put out a very big, long apology. She apologized for body shaming Riley Gaines, but then pretty much kind of doubled down on what she was saying about fairness in sports. So it's unfortunate, but I was encouraged by the response and the support Riley Gaines got in support of that. People calling out and mocking Simone Biles.
And there it is. Buzzer and a timer. All right, reset the clock. You got 2 minutes. Ready? Go.
College World Series. We're now on to Omaha, where we got the last eight teams. Yeah, Omaha. We got, eight teams left. So we got Coastal Carolina playing up against Arizona. And then we also got UCLA, Murray State, Oregon State, and Louisville. But then we got, in my opinion, the best matchup of the weekend, not because they're SEC teams, but that may be part of it. Arkansas versus LSU. I think Arkansas versus LSU. Coastal Carolina, I would say, is kind of at the same tier of those teams. But Arkansas, LSU, I think, is really the best matchup to start in Omaha. And it's unfortunate that they're matching up against each other this early, because I think both of those teams deserve to make it a lot further than the first round. But unfortunately, you know, only one's going to be able to. But Arkansas came up against, or is coming after, a big series win against Tennessee, where Tennessee, Arkansas too. I think that right there could have been an Omaha matchup in and of its own. But Arkansas, their pitching staff is just way too powerful, and Tennessee was not able to repeat as champions. But right there, I think the winner of that series will probably play Coastal Carolina in the national championship. That is what I'm predicting. You know, Coastal Carolina came off of a series win against Auburn too, which it's unfortunate for Auburn because they had to play a great team early as well. But like I said, I think Arkansas LSU, that winner is going to go on to the championship and will face Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina looking to get its first championship since 2016. And we're looking to have yet another SEC national champion, which, you know, I'm rooting for, because I think I like to see SEC dominate all sports.
But there is the whole thing about, I'd like for Coastal Carolina to win, because then Auburn can say they lost to the national champion.
There's that, too. And Coastal Carolina is kind of a fun team to root for, the Chanticleers.
Is a Chanticleer?
It's some sort of chicken, a bird hybrid. I don't know. You got to be unique. You can't call yourself the Coastal Carolina Chickens. You know, you got the Chanticleers.
Why don't you call yourself the Coastal Carolina Pirates or the Buccaneers?
I don't know.
You're on the coast.
The Chanticleers, and then they got that teal color, so they're pretty unique.
And there's the buzzer. You still got time. Let's reset the clock. You got a little bit of overtime in you. Come on. Get it.
So we got a text in, actually. Tom from Decatur asked a pretty good question I'd like to talk about. He said, "Hey, JP, will this feud between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark ruin all the gains of fans of WNBA's experience last year? Was Clark's injury blatant? My granddaughter is a huge fan of Clark and doesn't understand why she's being treated like this." Well, I don't understand why Caitlin Clark is being treated like this either. She's not really being welcomed into the WNBA like she should. And right now, she does have an injury, so she's not playing. And I'm trying to find this. I believe the correct stat is that the WNBA ratings have dropped, over 50% since Caitlin Clark has been injured.
Over 50%.
The WNBA ratings have plummeted over 50% since Caitlin Clark's been injured. Golly. So I think that stat alone proves how much eyeballs Caitlin Clark is bringing into the league. But of course, it's being turned into a race battle between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. And yeah, I agree. I don't think the injury was blatant. I think she just kind of tweaked it. But she has been getting body checked like crazy by people in the WNBA.
It's ridiculous.
It's pretty crazy. But no, I actually think the WNBA's, you know, feud between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark could help it, if the WNBA embraces it in the right way. Don't make it a race battle. Don't say, "Oh, well, Caitlin Clark's why Andrew's about." Like, it doesn't have to be a race thing. Just make it what it is. It's a great rivalry, and that rivalry is going to bring more eyes to your sport. So I would say welcome the rivalry, embrace the rivalry, but then also embrace Caitlin Clark, because, like I said, over 50% of people stopped watching when she got hurt. That is an insane number. Like, that's over half of your viewership.
Did you say how long is she going to be out? Do we know?
I believe she's coming back this week. So she'll be back. But she's been out for about 2 or 3 weeks.
I mean, for too much longer, the WNBA is going to, like, just have to pay minimum wage.
Yeah.
Because Caitlin Clark's out.
They play slightly over that right now.
All right, good job, man. There it is. That's JP on sports. Coming up next, our friend Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute checking in. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.